This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
Hi, I'm ecologist Dr. Ray Wingrant, and on Dear Daughter Stars, I'm sharing a letter to my daughter about how to conquer self-doubt and talking about the time I got chased by a bear. Dear Daughter Stars from the BBC World Service. Listen now by searching for Dear Daughter wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
I'm running past security and going through the synagogue gates. Classic, I'm running late as per usual. I had to do an outfit check and my mate M reassured me that I looked great. She told me, just be yourself. How can I be myself when I'm about to be really pushed, no forced, out of my comfort zone? My name is Amy Leibowitz, and you're listening to the documentary on the BBC World Service. In the past, I've done a lot of work speaking about my Jewish identity for the BBC, but never this personal. In this episode of Heart and Soul, which explores personal approaches to faith, I'm going dating. In the past, I've dated a mix of people, different backgrounds and faiths. However, it feels like there's something missing. But it's difficult when there's not a lot of us. So I wanted to try a different approach and see if traditional matchmaking techniques can be used in the modern Jewish world and even help me find my soulmate. I'm walking into the prayer hall and there's hundreds of people. There's instant chatter and they're all waiting for one person. I remember when the Netflix show Jewish Matchmaking came out. There was a buzz in my community. Everyone was talking about it.
My name is Aliza Ben Shalom and I am a matchmaker and dating coach.
Welcome.
I watched it with my friend Em. She's not Jewish, but a part of a minority group in the UK. And we often compare the highs and lows of dating. We found that although there were definitely key Jewish rituals and values on display, many of the concepts were universal.
The rule of thumb is date him until you hate him.
Red flags. I definitely was into him. There was chemistry.
How big is his mezuzah?
One of those key rituals that everyone envisions is the breaking of the glass under the chuppah. When two become one, that's the moment you know when your fate is sealed. Being a part of an ethnic group or religion can be difficult to navigate. Like you, your friend, your family member, I've been trying to navigate this dating world that was very different to our parents and grandparents. Em and I thought about what it would be like to let someone take control of your love life. But it couldn't just be anyone. It would have to be someone that understands your identity. Someone that recognizes the different challenges that you may face in life. So, months later, when the show's host, Aliza Ben Shalom, came to London for one night only, I thought, why not give it a shot? She's hosting an event in one of my local synagogues, giving out dating advice and hoping people will mingle. So, here we go.
Good, how are you?
I'm good. Let's walk and talk and get in. It's really cold. Yeah, we have a lot to discuss about last night.
I'm looking forward.
And I should explain, basically, Aliza, she spoke at a synagogue and there was some really interesting characters that came up on stage.
Live matchmaking, like in the flesh.
Yeah, live matchmaking in the flesh. And first of all, I thought they were so brave, but it really made me think a lot about what I want in a partner and how that's changed over a period of time. And there was a section at the end where you could meet people that were
did
also...
Did you stay for the meeting?
I did stay for the meeting.
Oh, good. I want to know what happened because I wasn't there.
Yeah. So Aliza went off to bed, which is completely fair. And I was left to my own devices. I went and I met a bunch of people. And basically, I didn't meet anyone that I was interested in. And I almost felt like I was in the Negev desert being like, oh, God, I feel so lost.
Yeah.
I'm going to interrupt myself here. I actually hated it. I was just being polite. This feeling of being in a room full of strangers analyzing you and then you're obviously doing the same. It was not for me in the slightest. Let's start from a bit of a beginning kind of standpoint. In terms of history, culture, and matchmaking within Judaism, has this always been a thing?
Yeah. So, like, let's take it way back to biblical times. If we go back as far as Adam and Eve, right? Adam's created and he's looking all around and he's like trying to find his mate, so to speak.
Right.
And yeah, you know who was in the world? Like giraffes and monkeys and elephants. And he's like, are you my soulmate? No. How about you? No. Right. And finally, you know, Adam and Eve, he comes upon her and is like, ah, okay, there we go. That's my soulmate. Right. And you might think like, oh, well, that was kind of obvious, but not necessarily in the beginning. It's not so obvious, and definitely not now. It's not so obvious who we should actually be with.
Wow.
This is like, Matt, from the beginning of time, matchmaking has always existed.
Okay. So then in terms of bushrat or soulmate, like, so how does it work? Do we only have one person? By the way, the Yiddish word bushrat means preordained or destiny. Often described as soulmate, it's the belief that we all have a predestined spouse waiting for us.
Right, so there's some soulmate rules. You only get one soulmate at a time. But in a lifetime, you could have many soulmates. It just depends. How many times would you like to be married? So how do you make a soulmate, right? You start dating. Oh, I like you. You like me, whatever. Yay. Oh, I think that person, they are my soulmate. I know it. I know they're my soulmate. If you don't marry them, they're just your potential soulmate. They're only your soulmate if you actually pick them, choose them, and marry them. If you don't, they were just a potential soulmate that didn't turn out to be your soulmate.
So what are the main differences between secular, traditional, and orthodox matchmaking? I mean, I guess it's more in terms of perhaps goals and timelines might be different, because I'm thinking to myself, okay, I am secular, I'm more reform, and maybe I'm doing it wrong. Maybe there's orthodox couples or ultra-orthodox couples that are doing something different that I'm not doing that's working. I don't know. Like, I'm trying to be as open as possible. Are there even any differences in terms of how religious you are?
So the major difference is, for sure, is how we go about dating. Many people, whether you're secular or religious, if you're coming to a matchmaker or you're thinking about matchmaking, you're marriage-minded. So that puts everybody universally on the same marriage-minded page. But what it doesn't do is the timeline. So that's something that's very different. So in Orthodox circles, you could be engaged after 10 dates. Okay. You could be engaged after 2 or 3 months. You could be married by 3 or 6 months down the road. And in secular relationships, you might declare that you're boyfriend and girlfriend after 3 months, and you might stick together for, I don't know, a year and a half. And then 2 years later, maybe you'll get engaged. And, you know, another year after that, maybe you'll get married. So the timelines are extremely different. But the goal, I think, is the same. So I think that there is this unification where we're all similar in one way. The other major difference in dating, I would say, is with marriage-minded dating, if you're in the Orthodox world, we have certain things like shomer negia, guarding our touch, which means I'm not going to touch you until I marry you. If I pick you as my partner, we're going to get married, and then I'm going to touch you. And in the secular world, it's kind of like, well, I'm not going to marry you unless I touch you and probably sleep with you on like a first, second, or third date, which to me is like, are you kidding me? Like, you, I don't even know if I like you. And they're like, yeah, that doesn't matter, because if we're not, you know, physically compatible, who cares about what's on the inside? And I'm going, if you're not compatible on the inside, who cares about the physicality? Like, we don't need that.
Right, yeah.
So I do make a modified version of not touching for the secular world, which is what I call my 5-date challenge. Okay.
Okay. So what is this 5-date challenge?
Okay. I'm going to challenge you to do it. Okay. It goes like this. And I do think that this is one of the big mistakes in the secular world. I'm not saying never touch, because I don't think that's a reasonable ask for somebody who's not religious and doesn't practice that. But what if you did not touch for the first 5 dates? Okay. It's shocking, right? Like, everybody expects at least a first kiss, maybe on a first date. I mean, if you're not taking it much further, it depends on
first to third.
Uh-huh.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, but what if you just didn't touch at all? No handshake, no hug hello, no kiss on the cheek or the lips or anything, nothing until after 5 dates. I'll tell you what I know. I know at that point, you like that person. I know at that point, they like you back. We just got rid of 90% of the confusion in dating. Actually, you both should have a lot more clarity because you will have spoken to each other, right? That's the whole purpose. We get to know each other. If you don't like each other, you're not going to continue past 5 dates. You're going to dump them or they're going to dump you. Yay! That's a win. We don't need to physically win them over just to dump them later because, you know, inside our values or emotionally we're not compatible. That's ridiculous. Let me dump you sooner than that.
Say I wanted to go through this matchmaking process. How do you even start this process?
So we take people through a journey and we get to know them and help them get to know themselves even better. And it's less about getting to know you and more about you being able to explain who you are to the rest of the world in a way that the world can understand. Because I can explain something, you can explain something, but if other people don't understand it really well, it doesn't matter what we said. It has to be in a way that other people can actually get you and understand you and receive you. So can you tell me a little bit about, I would say, personality and values and beliefs?
Like, all right. So basically, I word vomited a list to Aliza that's too long for this program. But a bit about me. Hi, my name's Amy. I'm 31. I was born and bred in Sydney, Australia. But I've been living in London, United Kingdom, for over 60 years now. I always wanted to be a journalist and make documentaries, but who knew my personal life would also be exposed in this very format? I didn't go to a Jewish school, but still chased boys at Jewish summer camp with the rest of my friends. I became more involved in exploring my Jewish identity at university and haven't looked back. I love to go out dancing and see my friends. I travel a lot for both work and fun. And so what am I looking for?
Mm-hmm. Wait, are we about to do a list?
can you give me a list? I really love like a top 10. I'm not a top 3 person. It's not enough. But if you give me like a top 10, you know, like whatever comes after that 11, 12, 13, like who cares? But at least if you get in a range of what you want in the top 10, we're good.
Oh my God, we're doing Amy's list. Okay, here we go. I really value intellect. Someone that's funny because my job can be an absolute drag and, you know, it's really important to laugh in this world. Someone that is compassionate and kind and shows a lot of empathy. I would hope that they have a really good communication with their family or ideally like a social group. You know, I'm a really social person, preferably not kosher, or I could deal with kosher style. Mm-hmm. I could be flexible in kosher style,
okay,
which means someone that doesn't eat pork or shellfish and someone that has a connection to Israel. Yeah. And someone that is really like trusting and loyal that wants to really conquer the world. Because that's what I want to do. So is that enough?
It's fabulous. And what I loved is as you were talking, you like sparkled. I could see how excited you were to share everything and that you were thinking about it and it was deeply meaningful and it was there for you.
Yeah.
So yeah, I got a sense of what you're looking for.
So yeah.
He exists, by the way. The other thing about soulmates, they're living, they're breathing, they exist in the world. They're already born. They're here for you. You don't have to worry that maybe like, maybe there's nobody here for me. It's not how the world was built. In the blueprint of creation, souls come into the world and potential soulmates are here and you get free will. You get to choose who you want to be your soulmate.
So supposedly this soulmate is about somewhere. I have to admit something. That interview was recorded a couple of weeks after the 7th of October attacks by Hamas on Israel. Off mic, Aliza and I would talk about it. But of course, we didn't know that the world would unravel the way it did. For the first few months, I really changed as a person. And on top of things, I had a family emergency halfway across the world. I was living in survival mode. I tried not to let world events get to me, but working in a newsroom and having family and friends in Israel made that impossible. I was being impulsive and a lot of logic went out the window, which impacted my dating life. I decided to pause for a bit and had the chance to go home to Sydney, Australia for a few weeks in February. Then I received a voice note from a friend.
Hey Amy, what are your plans for Purim? I just got an invite for this really cool event in Sofia in Bulgaria for this young professional Jewish Purim party weekend event. And I really want to go. And I was wondering if you want to join me.
Okay, this came from left field. On the Festival of Purim, it's customary to listen to the story of Queen Esther from the Megillah and go to costume parties. It can get pretty chaotic. My plan was to stay in London and, you know, keep it really low-key. Sharon, on the other hand, wasn't going to take no for an answer. And in any case, you'll never know who you'll meet.
What life advice would you like to give to your children? I'm Namulanta Kombo, and that's the question I'm asking in the new series of my podcast, Dear Daughter Stars. Among my guests are actor Adjoa Ando from the hit Netflix series, Bridgerton.
Find what you're built for. What's your unique gifting?
Podcaster Audrey Akande from the Receipts podcast.
Don't let anyone dim your shine. Your voice matters.
And nature presenter Ray Wynn Grant.
What have wild animals taught me about parenthood? Almost everything.
Dear Daughters Stars from the BBC World Service. Listen now by searching for Dear Daughter wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
My name is Amy Leibowitz, and you're listening to The Documentary on the BBC World Service. On this episode of Heart and Soul, I'm navigating the world of Jewish dating and exploring the trouble people like myself have when trying to find a Jewish match, when we're just a tiny percentage of the world's population. I've found myself at a Purim event in Bulgaria. These types of events are known for mixing and mingling in our community. It also turns out there's a lot of people here trying to find a match. Walking into the hotel of the event, I had to hold my breath. That same kind of anxiousness came over me. There were people everywhere. Different languages, backgrounds, and levels of religiosity. There was a lot to absorb. Sharon is from Frankfurt. We actually met there at a different event about Jewish women empowerment, which I was covering for a story. We shared a room this time round, and as we were getting ready for dinner, I asked her how important it is for her to find a Jewish partner and what it means to her.
I asked myself the question quite often. So I remember I did not study in Germany, I studied in Vienna. And before I moved to Vienna, I just turned 18, I think it was 2 weeks after my 18th birthday, my mom made me promise. She's like, I know, there's 160,000 students. You're going to have a lot of fun. Please find a Jewish guy. Mm. So I think for a long time it was really important for me. But while I grew and actually also tried to explore my own Jewish identity, I would say my opinion changed a little bit. So while I would say Jewish values are incredibly important for me when dating, it should not be the only excluding criteria to finding a partner. Why do I say that? It's one of the first things that comes up when dating, actually, because I want to raise my children that I hopefully will have in the future if everything goes well, Jewish, which means it's way easier to find a Jewish partner who is willing to raise the kids Jewish with you, and you have also more complicated topics like the circumcision, the Brit Milah, but also like raising the kids with all the tradition, language, community, safety, security, festivities, events. It's easier to do it with a Jewish partner.
So if someone wanted to find a Jewish date in Germany, how do people go about that?
We have multiple ways. So I'm going to tell you about my way. So I'm quite an open person and I'm quite liberal. So I think the easiest way to meet someone is like by going to events. So we do have a lot of Jewish parties in a bigger city. So in Berlin, you will find Jewish partner for kind of everything, regardless if you're looking for like conservative Orthodox or like kinky half-naked Jew in Kit Kat, you will find a Jew for like the different parties. I would say in the current situation, you cannot show yourself as a Jew to non-Jews. Like I would not go out with my Magen David, with my Star of David, so that other Jews can approach me. But if I want to find a Jewish partner, it's either like apps, friends of friends, and mostly those events.
So why have you come to this sort of event? And in fact, you were the one that told me to come to this event.
Maybe I wanted to find you a partner. I love to dance on Jewish weddings. No, seriously. Honestly, multiple parts. For me, the main reason to come here was not finding per se a partner. Might change in a couple of months, of course. I've attended an event like 3 years ago in Poland, also by the same organization. And I met really, really great people. And it's just fun to hang out. We explore the city together. We go to Purim parties. We dress up. We have the same values. We make the same stupid jokes that nobody else understands. So I'm here to make friends, explore the city. If I meet somebody I like, that's a nice extra. But I don't like this forced approach. You have to find a husband now. I would rather find your husband here. That's why I brought you.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
As time went by, I met lots of different people and wanted to know what their process was. If you can imagine, I'm wearing a cat costume because I'm lazy. It's Prize, and I got chatting to a guy named Mark. He's from Turkey. A bit young for me, but he makes good conversation and actually puts an effort into his costume. He was telling me how difficult it is to date Jews in Turkey when there are so few of them.
The number is correct. We have roughly 10,000 people. So the dating life is hard and easy at the same time. It all depends on if you're putting the Jewish filter on or not. The reason for this is most of the Jewish young people leave Turkey to go universities, then they try to stay there and live abroad. So if you put the Jewish filter, you don't have many choices. And amongst them, you have to find people that like you can meet, you can have fun, like spiritually, like grow together and stuff. That is very hard. If you're in a relationship with a non-Jewish person, then it becomes hard to talk about this with your parents, because like they want you to be with a Jewish person. And I've had many fights with my parents about this topic. And like they're actually afraid that I will love a non-Jewish person and will want to marry her, which I kind of understand, because the culture is very different between a Jewish and a non-Jewish person. And in Turkey, like, we're a Muslim country, so it's actually very different. So in long term, it will create some problems. Of course, you can solve them, but it will require patience, time, and lots of energy.
So we're at this Purim party. Everyone is dressed up. There's a lot of alcohol and a lot of languages flying about as well. Although, something I did notice was the large amount of French people that were present. They were kind of sticking to themselves, and I was told this was more of a language barrier thing. I befriended a Parisian named Cindy. We were looking around the place, not interested in anyone. She's a neurobiologist. She's funny, beautiful, and yet she's still screaming out, "But where are all the men?" I asked her about using a matchmaker, which she seemed open to. However, dating in France seems like it's in another league. She's Sephardic. Her background is Tunisian. It's a tight-knit community. So I thought, maybe like in Turkey, wouldn't you know everyone?
No, we all know, like, we don't know all of them. Like, I'm still going to single event when I don't know every French people, girl or guys. But the thing is, like, at some point, the pool of persons that are dedicated to go to single events are always the same. Like, there is a huge part of guys and girls that don't go to this event, and they are not present as Jewish, and they are dating outside the Jewish community. So we're not meeting them.
So then how do you find a Jewish partner in France?
It's a hard question because there is so many options. Like, basically, we have, like, G-Swipe dating app, worldwide famous, but like this year there is two dating apps that was created by French Jewish influencer, two different one. And after that, you still have going to single events. There is so many of them in Paris. There is so many like party, community club, like afterworks, or even Shabbats that are organized like for Jewish people and single people. But at the end, you can also just go to a bar.
I think what we naturally forget is that apps are another form of matchmaking. I asked Aliza what she thought about apps, and she said that it's fine. A match is a match. But she argued, how could AI replace a human doing the digging for you?
Whether you're on an app or in person, you're going to see a person's face. That's what happens. And you're going to make a judgment. And the judgment is going to be like this. It's going to be like, no, ooh, yes, or like, eh, maybe. So my recommendation is, if it's a hard no, you don't have to be schmoozy and friendly. But if it's a maybe or a yes, I would look into it. I would talk. I would connect with people. Oh, and speaking of matches, actually, I have a match idea for you. Can I send it over?
Look, I'm not the type to be staring at the moon longing for someone. I feel complete within myself. Life doesn't always have to be in pairs. It's just nicer when you are in one. When I came back to London, Aliza sent me profiles. They were actually pretty spot on. However, within the time frame of this experience, I didn't match with anyone. Interestingly enough, she didn't end up being my only matchmaker. My friend Amit is always trying to play Cupid.
Shalom, Sheena Midalayimi. I just had a dinner with this guy that I want you to meet. He's your age. He's Litwak, so Lithuanian descent, just like you. Yes, I hope you're not cousins. Haha. He's from Cape Town, South Africa. He has cute accent, and obviously he's Jewish. And he lives in London close by, so you won't have to commute for an hour. So if you're okay, I would love to connect you guys to maybe go on a date. I know his mom, so he's back-checked. And basically, she wants him to date Jewish girls, so I'm waiting for your permission to make that intro and see what happens. Love you.
The cousin concern is super real. We're 0.2% of the world's population. I have two friends who share Gibraltarian backgrounds and on the second date decided to double-check their ancestry in case they were related. Luckily, they aren't. I've decided for privacy purposes of the other people I went on dates with, I wouldn't disclose their identities. I know you're begging for the tea. Well, what I can tell you is that, supposedly, my Bichette is still out there. Going through this experience during this time has brought out a side of me that I didn't know existed. For the average person, it's already difficult to find someone. Now imagine being a part of such a small minority that's spread all over the place. We're so set within our own self-inflicted boundaries, dependent on culture and adherence to Jewish law, that I'm surprised that more people aren't using matchmakers. Either way, to answer Emini's question, is it worth having someone take control of your love life? Could a shadchan or a matchmaker fit into the current dating scene? I think someone who is personable and understanding is worth trialing. I'd say to anyone who's considering going through this process to be open and willing to let go of your expectations, because somewhere out there, your Bichette is waiting for you. I know mine is. This Heart and Soul episode was presented by me, Amy Leibowitz, and the executive producer is Rajiv Gupta.
What life advice would you like to give to your children? I'm Namulanta Kombo, and that's the question I'm asking in the new series of my podcast, Dear Daughter Stars. Among my guests are actor Adjoa Ando from the hit Netflix series, Bridgerton.
Find what you're built for. What's your unique gifting?
Podcaster Audrey Akande from the Receipts podcast.
Don't let anyone dim your shine. Your voice matters.
And nature presenter Ray Wynn Grant.
What have wild animals taught me about parenthood? Almost everything.
Dear Daughter Stars from the BBC World Service. Listen now by searching for Dear Daughter wherever you get your BBC podcasts.